1 year ago to the day, on April 3rd, 2023, Courtney Kearns and her boyfriend Zachary were in a house fire. Our first responders, they were on scene, and the story, it is a sad story, it's a tragic story where the family suffered loss, it's also a very heroic story filled with miracles. So you might want to get your tissues for this one, but we hope you enjoy listening to this episode of Here in Hoptown.
About 1:30, Courtney wakes me up, and I hear pounding on the door. So I freak out, think somebody's trying to kick the door in and try to steal. So I grab my gun to go to the bedroom door to open it. Open the door, and I'm immediately hit in the face by smoke. Can't breathe. So I turned around and put the gun on the bed. I remember telling Courtney, or saying, the house is on fire, come on. And I basically duck walked around the corner and out the front door. Got out the front door, on the front steps, turn around, and she's not behind me. My heart, my stomach, everything drops to my feet. Everything jumps to my feet, jumps to my throat, everything. And I'm like, where is she? My first thought was she went for the dogs to the laundry room. I had my phone, so I turn on my phone flashlight. I crawl back in, I get about 10 feet into the T-intersection. I can't go any further, and I'm surprised she even went that far. And I'm calling her name, and I'm screaming, and I get an idea, like, I can't get to the smoke this way, so I can go around to the laundry room door and have the power company dudes try to kick the door in, because I'm still in my underwear. The power company dudes attempt to kick the door in, but they never get the door kicked in. So I go back around the front of the house to try to go back in that way, and at that point, the fire department pulls up. It's best for me to just get out of the way and watch and pray.
So Kyle Graves and Anthony Richardson are two of the firemen. I'm sure you weren't the only two firemen there. But
it was a lot more than just
a lot more. But we had you guys come today because you guys did play a significant role in this. And we've heard already, I mean, this is a traumatic story. Fires are traumatic things that happen to families. First of all, what's it like just going into high stress situations like that on a daily? How do you prepare for that?
You just got to trust your instincts. You know, it's something we train for daily. And when that instinct comes up, you just got to trust your instincts. With Richardson being my firefighter that night, I knew I could trust him. You know, me and him worked together for a long time. So it wasn't something I felt like I had to worry about. We knew what our job was, and we just went to work. You know, we just do work.
So when you got on the scene of this, tell me, what was your experience when you got on the scene at Courtney's house?
Well, what I remember was we got paged out with a structure fire with possible rescue involved. As we started going that way, me and Lieutenant Graves kind of talked about what we were thinking, what we were going to do if we had certain scenarios. This is what we do normally onto a fire, like, hey, we're going to pull this or we're going to do this. Just kind of gives us a game plan before we got there. So as we arrived on scene, there was a call for that there was an actual female inside the house that wasn't found. The first engine arrived on scene, and they were going around back where they last thought she was. I think her boyfriend told them she possibly could be in the back room. So they went that way. As we showed up, Battalion Chief Wood was standing out front and told us to do a search. So we pulled a line, made entry into the structure, made a left-hand search. And as we're making a left-hand search, something caught my eye in, I guess, their bedroom. I seen like a light. I think it was a cell phone. Honestly, it's the only reason I seen it was there was a light that lit up. So I went to that window or that door as he was searching the other room. And as I made entry into that door, I noticed there was a female laying in the bed, unresponsive and agonal breathing. So what that means is she just wasn't really breathing very well.
Every parent's worst nightmare is to receive that telephone call that their child's been hurt. Lori Kearns, Courtney's mom, talks about what it was like to get that phone call, as well as gives a very real account of what it was like in the hours and days following when she had to make important decisions, fully expecting that her daughter was going to pass away.
Zach called me immediately, said that the house is on fire and that Courtney's dead. He was just sobbing, uncontrollably sobbing. The firefighter said that they took Courtney by ambulance to Jenny Stewart Hospital, so I went directly to Jenny Stewart to check on her. They told me that they couldn't give me any updates whatsoever. They couldn't tell me she was alive or dead. They said that they were just working on her. I know if they're working on her, that means that she's alive. I gave them my name and phone number. They said that they would call me with any updates or if they transferred her. So I said, great, fine. I went back to the house and was figuring out what our next steps were. It'd been a couple hours, so I ended up going back to Jenny Stewart, and they said that they had life-flighted her to Vanderbilt. When I got to Vanderbilt, they said that she would not live 4 hours because of the cyanide in the smoke would swell her brain, and that it would herniate out the back of her skull, and that would be the way she would perish. And they said that it will happen any second. It was that bad. We got family together, and we were all up at the hospital praying and trying to come to the realization, but it didn't happen. Hour after hour, she didn't perish. Come 9 o'clock, the burn ward closes, so everyone has to leave at 9. So we all left. We were going to pull the plug. They said there was absolutely no hope. She is, in fact, brain dead. 4 different doctors throughout the shifts said absolutely no hope. So we did decide to pull the plug in the morning. She did sign organ donation paperwork. So we had a set time to be back at Vanderbilt at 7 in the morning to go down to the OR to see the last breath. As we showered at home, was getting ready to go out the door to a very horrible event, but we wanted to be there. The doctor called and said there has been a neurological change in Courtney. And I'm like, what change was there? And they said one eye flickered. So they resedated her and called to tell me this change and asked if I wanted to proceed with what was supposed to happen that morning. And I said, well, let us get to the hospital and we'll talk then. Shania, her twin sister, and I got to the hospital and talked with the doctor, and we asked, how can this eye flicker? And she said, we don't know. We don't understand. And she goes, do you want to give her 24 more hours? We gave her another 24 hours and sat and waited, and we had a huge group in the waiting room. And at that time, we had publicly announced that we were pulling the plug in the morning. A lot of her coworkers showed up and was saying their goodbyes. And by the end of the second day, she raised a finger. I got to talk to the doctor, and the doctor says she didn't know how she can do this. It's not medically answered. They don't understand. But her oxygenation was so low, it was not to sustain life. The ventilator could not give her enough oxygen in her lungs. Her lungs were trash. And on the second day, she raised her finger, and she still didn't pass. She still wasn't getting enough oxygen. The third day, we had a coworker in a room just having casual conversation, discussing bills. And Courtney's eyes plunked open, and she's lipping words around her trach tube. Bills, bills, bills. She had never done this before. And of course, the nurse is in her room the entire time. And I'm like, oh my God, she's saying bills. I'm like, are you saying bills? And she nodded her head, yes. And I'm like, oh my goodness, okay, didn't even think about bills. You know, okay, I guess I'll go look at bills tonight. Sure enough, she had a credit card bill due the next day. So we paid it off. We wanted to keep going. If she could understand bills, raise her fingers, lip words, understand what we were saying, we knew she was not brain dead. Day by day, week by week, she was coming back enough to understand. She's a stubborn old goat and would not take no for an answer. Eventually, she got her phone back and understood the velocity of what had happened throughout the weeks, understood that her 3 dogs had perished in the fire, and saw videos of the inside of the house of the fire, and did a lot of crying, and did a lot of, you know, look at where you are, you're alive, you know, stuff is stuff, and it's sad what happened, but you're alive, and that's what matters.
Well, I told you this was going to be a roller coaster of emotions, and we've heard from Courtney's boyfriend, we've heard from her mother, we've heard from the firefighters who pulled her from the fire. But now we're going to hear from Courtney and hear her experience. 1 year later, the walking miracle, we were actually able to sit down and interview her in our podcast studio.
I remember being in the hospital, but I was floating around, and I couldn't understand why, and I would break out of the hospital and they would take me back. And then after the hallucinations kind of dialed down, I remember seeing my family, my dad especially, and that's whenever it kind of hit me of like, maybe I was on medication because I'm not used to seeing my dad a whole lot. And I was like, yep, this stuff is definitely working because I see my dad, as bad as that sounds. And then after that part dialed down and I realized, oh, this is actually what's going on. Like, this is real life. I remember being strapped down to the bed, but I don't remember what was going on, and I was confused, and I remember it being hard to breathe. I remember the first day being able to lean over my bed, and it was like the best feeling ever. It hurt, but it was the best feeling ever. And I remember whenever the nurses told me not to do it, I would still lean over my bed just because it was like a freedom. They showed me some exercises I could do in my bed. I worked hard on when people were not there to focus on that, even though that they told me not to do it without nurses, I still did it because I focused so hard on being able to walk, to be able to get out type of a thing, that I did everything I could. And I remember the first day I was able to walk around the hallway, and I was on a walker, and it was like the best day ever. And there was a flower, and I was like, oh, look, it's a flower. Like, it's something different. So it's like I added on to my life. It was something different. At the time, I wasn't able to eat. I wasn't able to drink. It was just sit there and wait. So to be able to walk and see a flower was like a kid going to, like, the zoo. At least that's how it felt. And I remember calling my mom on FaceTime, and I told her I loved her, and like she almost cried because that was the first time that she was able to hear me talk.
I've been here almost going on 5 years. You've been here what?
I've been 10.
10 years. Yeah. And I don't know of any rescues that were of this nature to be successful, where the, you know, the person is still here and with us and with no deficits that I know of. You seem, yeah. You know what I mean? You know, and you know, that's amazing. That's, I mean, it is what it is. It's amazing. And
yeah.
It's to me, it's nice to be a part of something like that. You know, like I said, we didn't get into this service to do that per se, but we are doing it. But it's a good thing to, you know, lay your head down and know I've actually was able to be a part of that. It just shows the department we have and the teamwork we have, the capabilities of the people we have at this department. It's just good to know. And, you know, and that's, if there is something that happens in this city, you know, we're there to help, and we're here to do what we got to do to do the best we can to help what we can.
I was getting all this coordinated with Peyton. The way he talked about Lori, it's like, oh, I'll just give him a call. We'll text her. It's like you guys are kind of like a family now, and you're, y'all have kind of come together in this. Well, what should have been a tragedy, and it came together, and it's like extended family now.
Anything fires, we're all a big brotherhood. We're all family. You know, and Future said it in that little ceremony where she came, you know, and that she's part of the family now. You know, once you're part of the family, you're part of the family. Mm-hmm. We all kind of stick together, and if she ever needs anything, we're here. You know, vice versa. We're just here to help out. And it's always going to be etched in my head, and I'm sure Kyle's head, for the rest of our life, of what went on. So, you know, at the end of the day, if you ever need anything, we're always going to be here for you, no matter what it is.
You never know how many people are in your corner until the worst comes, and I have never had as good of a group as I do now. And it makes me happy to know that I have the best group around. Especially the firefighters have been the best people ever. Like, I don't remember what day it was, but we went over there to thank them and everything, and I couldn't help myself. The whole time I was crying. I couldn't even talk, so my mom talked most of the time. Just because I was so happy that they were there that I had the chance to thank them versus it being opposite and it being funeral. These people had my back, and it's like, without them, I'm nothing. So pretty much, like, I owe them my life.